Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hi, everybody, and we begin today with your calls on the Iraq War if you don't remember Vietnam. Now, as you've been hearing in the news the last few days, this is the 10th anniversary week of the start of the Iraq War, and honestly, I've hardly known how to contribute to the topic this week on our program, even though we talked about the war endlessly on the show before and during it. Should we do yet another discussion of the lies or mistakes that got us into the war? More on all the dead and injured or the challenges for returning vets? More on the ambiguous state of whether Iraq itself is better off even without Saddam Hussein? My impulse is we know already. Let's look forward rather than back. And yet, we have to at least acknowledge it. This war was one of the biggest things in the life of our country for the last decade, the life of our world for the last decade. So instead of more historians and analysts and interest groups, here's what we've decided to do. Simply leave it to some of you to tell everyone else listening how the Iraq War has shaped your generation. So we want to know if Iraq was your first major U.S. war as an adult. How did it shape your view of war in general and America's place in the world? If Iraq was your first major U.S. war as an adult, how did it shape your view of war and America's place in the world? 212-433-WNYC. And as your calls are coming in, just a couple of thoughts to put it in an even larger context. Iraq was part of the U.S. response to the attacks of 9/11 in 2001, of course. So if you see yourself as part of the Iraq War generation, you're also part of the 9/11 generation. Where does it all leave you in terms of when to wage a war, how to wage a war? Remember, drone strikes on individuals are, on one level, the minimalist response to the failures of this large-scale ground invasion in Iraq to fight a non-state enemy. So where does it all leave you regarding war and regarding America's role in the war? The Vietnam generation was a Cold War generation, divided over how big the Soviet threat was and whether the U.S. was tipping over the line from good to evil in its foreign policy in the name of anti-communism. Iraq raised similar good to evil responses, not to mention smart to stupid responses, in response to 9/11, those questions. But 10 years ago, President Bush had built enough popular support to begin the war on the very speculative prospect that Iraq might develop nuclear weapons and might share them with al-Qaeda. But then no WMDs, yes, Abu Ghraib, a massive insurgency when we were promised a cakewalk, a distraction from Afghanistan where al-Qaeda actually was. There was the Petraeus troop surge, which arguably made Iraq somewhat better, but 5,000 dead Americans, 100,000 dead Iraqis, many more by some estimates, a stronger Iran. And Bush and Cheney left office about as unpopular as they could be, largely because of their war in Iraq and what was accomplished. So that's some of my jaundiced shorthand take on it. How about yours? And one other thing before we go to your calls. Last night, one of our producers was at the taping of this week's Slate Politics Gab Fest. And who showed up as a guest talker but Stephen Colbert? And at the end, when he was asked what stories he was thinking about this week, he brought up Iraq. And this, by the way, will be Stephen Colbert talking out of character, which is very rare to hear Colbert just talking as himself, not as the Colbert character. And his take included Nixon, Vietnam, and the 10th anniversary of Iraq, and an almost unbelievable Gallup poll that shows barely half of Americans under the age of 30 think the Iraq War was a mistake. Listen.
So I'm just old enough to remember Nixon as actually being president, like actively and seeing speeches and that kind of stuff. And Watergate is very vivid to me because it interrupted the Munsters in the afternoon when I came home. And so I despair that people forget Nixon's crimes. And I don't mean just Watergate, which is, while it's you know, it's got a sexiness to it and bugging and that kind of stuff, is that like the war crimes of Nixon. I despair that people forget those, especially now with the 10th anniversary of the Iraq War, you know, having come and gone. Well, it was just the my chatter is about LBJ's library has released tapes that the BBC has done condensations of that say that while it was suspected for a long time that Nixon had helped prolong the Vietnam War in order to win against Humphrey in 68, the LBJ tapes say no, that was true. LBJ had been bugging ambassadors' phones in the lead up to the peace talks with South and North Vietnam, and that LBJ is heard saying, our friend in California, the Republican nominee, seems to be working on both sides of North and the South to keep these peace talks from happening, and says in the recordings, well, you know, this is probably treason, but I'm not going to tell anybody because then they'd find out I'm bugging the ambassador's phones. But he tells Humphrey.
Yeah.
And Humphrey says, no need, I've got this one. Now, of course, this led to the deaths of tens of thousands of people, shattered the trust of the American people to the American military establishment, to trusting the president, and changed your relationship to the president forever. And the depth of his selfish evil mustn't be forgotten. Because while he's not the only one, he's the for me.
Yeah.
And the for the American people, because he's the first one who had truly the adversarial relationship with the press, a press that was happy to engage in that adversarial relationship. Now, we just had the 10th anniversary of the Iraq War. A bare minimum of the American people think it was a bad idea now. You know, we've only been out 18 months totally. You know, officially military actions ended 3 years ago, or August 3 years ago, something like that. 40 years on, a majority of people 18 to 34 think that Vietnam was the right thing.
They do?
Yes.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
You buried your lead there.
I may be misquoting that. It may be younger, might be 18 to 24, but I'm shocked by both of those things.
Stephen Colbert on the State Politics Gabfest. More of that Slate Politics Gabfest will air tomorrow morning at 7 here on WNYC. And wasn't that an amazing Gallup poll that he cited? We looked it up, especially because there was a little bit of ambiguity there. And sure enough, just 50% of Americans 18 to 29 think the Iraq War was a mistake. 48% said not a mistake. And yes, among those same 18 to 29-year-olds in this very recent poll, most think Vietnam was not a mistake, 51%, and just 43% said the Vietnam War was a mistake. So those who didn't live through history, .. But now to your calls. If Iraq was your first major U.S. war as an adult, how did it shape your view of war in general and America's place in the world? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And you can post as well. Let's get a good, robust conversation going on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for those of you who won't get on the air. And Eileen and Summit, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling, Eileen. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for asking this question. I think in reflecting over the last 10 years and how various events have shaped, you know, all of our lives, war was, you know, an abstraction. I was lucky enough to have been born in 73, and, you know, grew up under the shadow of the Cold War, but it didn't really impact my everyday life as a child.
Mm-hmm.
I had a father who was sort of a veteran of the Cold War, so he was very patriotic and, you know, behind the president. And war did not become anything other than I read in my history textbooks. As a social studies major, war hit home on 9/11 when my husband was at the World Financial Center and we lost a brother-in-law in the first tower.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So the pervasive fear, you know, anybody that was a New Yorker or, you know, in the shadow of the Pentagon or in Pennsylvania, you know, in the whole country, but soldiers in the subways, riding the train and not knowing what was going to happen, and that pervasive fear. And the really the upsetting thing about all of that, in my opinion, was how that fear ended up, in my opinion, getting twisted into the justification for the Iraq War. because we had a situation where, you know, we could have turned left or we turned right. And we took the goodwill and the patriotism that was in the country, and it was skewed in the direction of the Iraq War.
And you felt that at the time, even as
absolutely,
somebody who
absolutely.
Lost someone on
9/11? My husband and I attended anti-war rallies, yet I stopped going when my own brother was deployed to Iraq. Because I couldn't do that to my brother. And it was a very, very difficult thing for me, because I remember watching Bush announce, you know, the invasion, and just my you know, BA in history that I got, I could see we're going down the wrong path. We're about to invade a country that is not going to like being colonized. And, you know, I was a social studies teacher at the time. Nobody was listening to me. And it wasn't an environment where you could talk about this. Because of the shadow of 9/11.
Right. It was so difficult to speak out against
them.
Yeah. And yet there were demonstrations, the Not in Our Name movement and all of that, and big demonstrations all over Europe, as you'll remember.
Yeah. You know, I remember going to the Republican convention came to New York City.
Right.
And being part of that.
2004.
So,
Eileen, where are you? I mean, it's clear where you are today. And where is your brother today?
I am deeply grateful that my brother is safe and doing well. And he is as patriotic. And, you know, I couldn't purport to say what his opinions are.
Uh-huh.
All I know is he's a great guy. He's a great dad. And he, you know, came back without a lot of the things that the other, you know, other vets came back with. We are blessed that he is well.
Well, I'm glad to hear
so
it.
So I'm grateful for that. And I think I suppose I'm not as optimistic. I'm a lot more skeptical. But what I'm also thinking is this is probably the same transition that the folks that came through Vietnam and that sort of disenchantment at the end of Vietnam. I think my generation has gone through that in its own way.
I'm going to leave it there and get some other voices on. We're blessed that you called us to start this off. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Alan in Little Falls. You're on WNYC. Alan, hello.
Hi. Big fan of the show. First-time caller. I was in eighth grade when we invaded Iraq. And I remember sitting in history class and sort of talking about it and feeling a really deep sense of patriotism that we were going to go in and we were going to get the bad guy, because a lot of teaching up until that point had been history is a story of good guys and bad guys and winners and losers, and there isn't this sort of blurred line. And certainly America would never do anything wrong. And I remember finding out through high school and then in college, the information started trickling out that, you know, maybe the intelligence wasn't as good as, you know, first told. Maybe everything wasn't true. And maybe the reasons that we went in were different than what I had first been told. And as a young person, and you start to find that out, it creates this really deep cynicism and really deep sort of appreciation for the truth. And it was really upsetting and jarring, and it really skewed my political views. And I became sort of bitter towards President Bush, who I had admired up until that point. And it sort of shifted my entire political ideology from the sort of patriotic person to the sort of liberal, left-thinking, truth-filled person who just wanted the truth and just wanted peace, and sort of saw America not in black and white, but sort of in this gray area.
What could make you support a future U.S. war? Anything?
I mean, I think it would be very hard for me to support any sort of future war. You know, we hear about Iran, and it's sort of the same sort of vague things about Iran that we got from Iraq. And we hear about North Korea testing, and it's all these sort of things that I feel like now there's just always this sort of drum of fear that try to get people motivated to go to war. And I may be cynical about the truth and the facts that are coming out, but I'm not cynical enough to believe that we need to go to war. We need to stop everyone, and we need to be the policeman for the world anymore.
Alan, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it. Let's go to Amanda next in Summit. Amanda, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is my first time calling the show. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
What I wanted to say was I was 12 when the towers fell, and I didn't really know too much about it. I got the day off from school, so that was a good thing for me as a 12-year-old.
There's an in-the-moment starting point.
Well, I mean, you're 12. People, you know, there's adults telling you something and you believe it's true. Mm-hmm. Everything that a teacher will tell you, you believe is true. There's not really that much questioning yet.
Mm-hmm.
But as I got older through high school and everything, I started to realize that not everything is this is true, this is not true. As in, a war isn't really something that just ends. There's always these ghosts that come back. And I feel that just from my knowledge of the war, it's like all our ghosts are coming back to that we've pushed off and that we've forgotten about and that we've finagled conflict out of. It's kind of, we're kind of realizing that it's not such a clean break to just end something. And I'm actually studying to be a teacher now. Mm. And I teach 12-year-olds now. And I'm thinking about them like they have never known a time when America was not at war. They are now at the age where they don't remember when we were never at war. And never in quotes. But, I mean, that's my take on it. I mean, everything is not so black and white. And I think that these future generations will be a little bit less forward. Like, they want to know more about all the aspects of all the consequences mm-hmm. of actions before.
Does it surprise you in that context that 18 to 29 year olds today, barely 50%, as Stephen Colbert put it, think the Iraq War was a mistake, and a majority think Vietnam was not a mistake?
Are you asking me about my opinion?
Yeah, and whether that surprises you to hear that poll result about your peers.
I feel that both of these actions were done in good faith originally, but once we got into them, we realized that there were a lot more issues that were occurring, and we were kind of fighting against an idea which honestly isn't really something very tangible, like terror or communism. Like, it's very hard to fight against an intangible thing. I think that's the difference. I mean, that's the similarities between both. I mean, in my knowledge. Mm-hmm.
Amanda, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Good luck studying to be a teacher. It sounds like you're going to be a thoughtful one. Elizabeth in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was in my early 20s on 9/11, and, you know, now I'm 36 years old, and I've lived in New York since I was 22, but I'm from an area originally where a lot of people I went to high school with must have served in this war. And a lot of what I think about is how these people, you know, we've almost lost this whole generation of these young people who are coming back. I don't know what kinds of jobs they're going to have. I don't know, like, what their mental states are like. And I really worry about those people, you know. And I think that this war has just had a devastating effect on losing a lot of people.
There's some noise on your line that's going to make us have to keep this short. But what do you think about America's place in the world now? What do you think about our country and our country as leader in the world, protector of ourselves, never mind, you know, our economic place or protector of others after the Iraq War?
I think that the world takes, you know, I think that, well, as an American, I don't feel as good about America's place in that anymore. I don't feel as trustworthy in our government. And I definitely feel that a lot of people my age and certainly the people in their 20s, one thing I see a real difference is that for me, coming out and coming of age kind of at the end of the Cold War, there was great hope in the world in the 90s, and that really changed with 9/11. So people in their 20s now, I think, even are more cynical.
Could the U.S. be the quote-unquote beacon of freedom for the world, as some people have have seen it at various times? Or is that not even something to aspire to, just isolate a little bit and live our lives?
I think that if we isolate a little bit and live our lives, we have a better chance of being a beacon of hope to the world.
Interesting. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. And thanks to all of you for your calls on this. A couple of things coming in print. Robert, on our Facebook page, a lot of comments on this on facebook.com/BrianLairdWNYC, our Facebook page. Robert writes, I was a freshman in college during the buildup to the war, the events that followed. He writes, Colin Powell lies to the UN. Of course, Powell says he was duped, but affected me greatly. Since that moment, I've become more militant toward federal authority, which clearly has overstepped its mandate. So maybe that turns into skepticism toward government. You know, there's a Vietnam hook to this, too. A lot of people who grew up to distrust their government because of Vietnam wound up becoming conservative. Not all of them became liberal activists. Some of them became conservative because they didn't trust the federal government. So they don't trust the federal government when it comes to health care and the economy and things like that. And Ellen from Hastings writes on our comments page, at the beginning of the Iraq War, I was a young newlywed in Brooklyn who had lost friends in the Trade Center. 10 years later, I am a mother of two daughters and a son. Iraq was a huge mistake, she writes. Vietnam was a huge mistake. And what the last 10 years have given me is a palpable fear of future reinstatement of the draft. I don't want to lose my son or even my daughters to some future mistake, writes Ellen from Hastings. Even as some other people say, it's time to reinstate the draft for the sake of equity. So thank you for your calls. Thank you for your comments. You can keep this very rich and multifaceted conversation going on our Facebook page or on the comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And we'll continue in a minute with a look at Congress through this lens. The sequester generation of Republicans now willing to live with big defense cuts and consider peacenik isolationist Rand Paul a serious presidential hopeful. Stay with us.